Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is Beth Bielo, and you're listening to the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today.
When asked the question, what's your least favorite part of being an entrepreneur? Sales is a frequently mentioned answer. And I don't think I'm speaking only for myself when I say that this is especially true for the typical introvert. And the truth is, it doesn't have to be that way. My guest today is Patricia Weber, and she's here to share with us some of the secrets to making selling your products and services easier and, believe it or not, more enjoyable. Patricia is an internationally recognized expert on radio and in print as a business coach for introverts, debunking negative introvert myths so introverts can stand up and be recognized for who they are, as they are, without any disguise. She is a Coachville graduate, as well as a neuro-linguistic programming practitioner. Patricia has served clients around the world since 1990 with expertise and experiences in sales, marketing, leadership, presentations, and in particular, networking. Her coaching, teleclasses, ebooks, and training lead and inspire introverts to live genuinely for the most success and fun in life. So welcome to the show, Pat. I'm really excited that you're here with us to share some tips about how introverts can become more comfortable with the sales process and following up. And we've got a lot of ground to cover, so let's get right to it. Are you ready?
I'm ready, and thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. So just to get right out the gate, you know, how can being in sales and being introverted coexist? They seem very contrary to me.
It is an oxymoron, isn't it?
It is.
I think how they coexist is by people starting to understand really that the sales process is really more of a buying process. And when you focus on how people buy, then you start to realize that the introvert actually more naturally brings a lot of things that the customer wants in the buying process, and the selling is kind of going along parallel with it. With certainly there are sales skills. I mean, I've been in sales for 30 years. I'm not saying there is no such thing as selling, but the selling is more existing with the introverted tendencies when you look at it through the buyer's eyes.
And so how do you see an introvert's strengths helping them to do that, to see it through the buyer's eyes?
Well, that's very interesting, and I'm always, as an introvert myself, into research and what are people saying about this and that, and in particular in my area of expertise of sales and marketing and then within that networking. Time after time, surveys come up with what customers want in dealing with a salesperson. Mm-hmm. And of the top few things that there are, the very first thing that the customer wants is a salesperson who listens.
Yes.
And when they're asked to describe what that means, it kind of gets down to that the salesperson isn't doing all the talking, and that when they're actually allowing the prospective client or client to really have the conversation with them, it's more of a bouncing back and forth by via questioning of the person who's selling. Mm-hmm. So if I were to say to you, you know, I'm really looking into portable beds for my mother, you wouldn't start just saying something about a portable bed. You would start as the salesperson by saying, well, tell me a little bit about your mother. What is it that she needs? How tall is she? How much do you want to spend? Rather than going right down the direction of, oh, we have the best thing in the store for you, and that's it. And I think introverts, and I remember one of my bosses saying this about me when I was in sales, that I sold more easily because I knew more about my customer than they did sometimes. Mm-hmm. Because I did it with this just natural ability that came to me, and I think comes to most introverts, which we take for granted, of listening and being curious and the curiosity using the questions to guide you to get your answers.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think curiosity is the huge piece of that that we can bring, and that should that actually brings me comfort, because I don't have to know the answers.
Mm-hmm.
I can ask the questions and draw it out of them, and that forms a much easier connection with people.
It absolutely does. And when you think that it's the customer who's saying the number one thing they either want, or the reason that they bought from the last salesperson they did is because they listened, mm-hmm. then you know that the person who's more of an introvert more than likely had an easier time doing that than someone who's more extroverted and is mm-hmm. more interested in going right down telling you all about themselves and what it is that they have and why it is that you should want it, instead of the opposite way of taking an interest in the customer. And that was the number two thing on the survey, knowing more specifically about what my needs are. So when you tie both the listening, the curiosity, and the ability to navigate that curiosity through questions, it comes up more in an introvert than it does in someone who's more extroverted.
That's very affirming to hear, very comforting. Very comforting, because I think we often get stuck with,
yeah.
even that word sales is very loaded.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that?
It is, and you know why that is, Beth? And when I was in corporate training for 10 or 15 years before I really took some time off and then started into coaching, I used to start off sales training courses with the question about, what do you think of selling
mm-hmm.
and salespeople? And what inevitably would come up is this list of most disgustingly negative words you could think of, and all under the umbrella of, and I'm sure there's some really good ones out there, used car salesman.
Right, that comes to mind first.
And what happens with most of us when we try to get that word out of our mouth, sales and selling, we're gagging on it because of our own experiences with mm-hmm. probably some of the worst of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
But when you reframe it and ask people, well, what do you think about the person you just bought from who you really like what you bought?
Mm-hmm.
Guess what you start getting? A lot of those characteristics that, because you bought and had a good experience, you know things were in there like, well, they followed up with me. They took their time with getting to know me.
Mm-hmm.
They asked me questions to know me. They listened more than they talked. And so it's so curious that it's because of the baggage that we all have with the experiences of selling, that once we're even in that career, we want to gag on it ourselves,
right.
saying, and that's why you have a lot of people when you ask them, well, oh, what do you do? Oh, I'm a consultant. But what do you do? Well, you know, people buy my, and they don't even like to say what I sell.
Right, right. Well, that reminds me of, you know, it seems to be a common theme among conversations with entrepreneurs and especially solopreneurs saying, well, I got into coaching or consulting or massage therapy or whatever to do that thing. And what ends up happening is, you know, it's like they wish they could spend 90% of their time doing that and 10% selling.
Right.
And it's really actually the flip.
Right.
In the case. And that can be, you know, I think that really is, at least my theory is that's what does a lot of people in the beginning, because the balance is not what they expected. It's a lot more selling than they expected. And because of that baggage, they haven't had a chance to reframe that and be authentic and curious and let their passion do the selling for them.
That's right. I love how you said that, because all of that is holding their passion back. It's holding it mm-hmm. captive. And they're not even being themselves. They're being this negative, embrazened image of a salesman that somehow in their mind either from the movies, and there's certainly a lot of movies. I love the one scene that Robert De Niro plays a used car salesman with all coming in. And, you know, he's basically the mafia fella, he's waiting for trial, so he's trying to behave himself, but he can't. He has to be his natural self. And it's one of the most hysterically funny selling scenes from that perspective that we all know, sleaze and push and, you know, not just having a conversation and true interest in your customer. So I think that's so good that you said that, because when you're held hostage with that in your mind, you are holding back on your passion and your enthusiasm, and that really is what sells.
And this is a nice segue to my next question, which is about kind of the missteps, you know, the mistakes that you see introverts making in the selling process. And one of those might be to be kind of caught up in that baggage and to have that particular frame that they're coming from experience.
Sure, I think that's a good one, Beth. That's a big one, because most of us think of selling as being, and it is, it's an extroverted activity, because there's so much conversation that has to go on with other people who are the buyers. And and the thing in that an introvert is making a mistake with is they're trying to do it the way an extrovert does. It's not going to work for them, because as you just said earlier, that baggage gets in their way from being authentic. And if they were authentic, if they listened more than they talked, if they used their natural curiosity, if they actually purposefully planned their next steps in combination or in conjunction with the client, the prospect, the planning is something we naturally like to do. And guess what? The prospect, the prospective customer, they like for us to do that too. They like to know, what is the next step? Okay, so we're meeting today, but what's going to happen next week? And what's going to happen beyond that? And so I think the biggest missteps are the introvert trying is to sell probably just from a role model that they know who's successful in sales, who they think is an extrovert, and they're trying to be all these things that they're not. And then that causes them to fall down further in the process, in particular with the follow-up, because if they're not feeling comfortable right from the get-go with being themselves and listening and asking questions and planning methodically based on what the customer says their time frame is, what our next step should be, then they themselves are setting the whole situation up for everybody to lose. Because you can't possibly help your customer if you're trying to be somebody you're not. And then if you're trying to be somebody you're not, then the way you're selling has got to be like that used car salesman picture that everybody has in their mind.
And what you're saying is bringing up a quote that I posted recently on Facebook from Fannie Bryce. And she says, let the world know you as you are, not as you think you should be. Because sooner or later, if you are posing, you will forget the pose, and then where are you? And so I think about that as you're saying, you know, putting on that mask of trying to be something you're not, and then when it comes to following up, it's like you've got to continue to hold that pose,
right?
And not what's real. And what happens when you can't hold that pose anymore? So in that vein of following up, if you don't mind, if we kind of work our way into that, because I know for myself personally that's something of a challenge. Even when I've shown up authentically, it's often because that follow-up is there's something a little intimidating about it and a little vulnerable. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that part of the sales process.
Sure. Yeah. And again, I guess I'm tying into being in sales for 30 years. And I can't say that I've gotten 100% of the clients that I've wanted, no matter what product or service I was selling. I can tell you, though, that I was always persistent with follow-up. And it became easy for me right from the beginning because my focus was always on the customer. And I actually happened to start in sales where it was a product to accountants. And the only time the accountants would be buying that product would be during their non-busy season in the U.S. We all know we're filing taxes between January and April 15th. So methodically, I have a follow-up plan. It was kind of a logical process that the planning for the follow-up that was done with the prospective accountant client would need to be done between May and December mm-hmm. because the reality is January through April, an accountant will be inaccessible.
Right.
Now, I'm giving this example because it really doesn't matter what field your client is in. It doesn't matter if they're a doctor, an attorney, a clerk at Walmart, a manager with Neiman Marcus. It doesn't matter. They have a timeline. What we have to figure out as entrepreneurs tasked with selling is what's that best timeline that we can follow up with them. Because when we make the follow-up and the selling about us and not the customer, that's when it starts to feel like, how do I know I'm not harassing them? How do I know I'm not yeah. bothering them? Mm-hmm. Well, just using the accountant example, if you were to plan your follow-up during January and April, January to April, you would know you're bothering them.
Right.
My goodness. Mm-hmm. That's when they have a busy season. But most other work, most other professions, teachers to maybe to some degree could have, you know, you could say, well, they're off in the summer. But does that mean they want to then pursue whatever it is you're talking about to them, or is that when they really want their time off? So this whole follow-up piece first falls apart because as entrepreneurs and small business owners who sell, we're keeping our focus again on ourselves many times in our head, and we're doing it this way. Oh, I've got to follow up with them to get this sale. Mm-hmm. I've got to follow up with them to get this next client. Oh, I've got to follow up with them because I haven't met my quota.
Mm-hmm.
That's the mental work that's going on that prevents us from the follow-up, whereas the best way to follow up would be is if you knew that customer, exactly what they wanted, what their needs were, what their wants were, and you planned with them from the beginning, what is it that you want to buy that we can set a timeline out to so that you have it when you want it. And now you're thinking in your follow-up as well, if you know your industry well, then after a few prospective client workings, you kind of get into a rhythm. Like, mm-hmm. Beth, I used to sell mostly to corporate America for corporate training,
mm-hmm.
but when I sold computers, it was very early in the 1980s when they weren't a commodity like they are now, and I sold to individuals. Well, an individual sale could go very, very quickly. I mean, you would have to ascertain their buying style. Were they quicker, slower? Did they need more detail, less detail? Did they have to know someone who actually bought from you versus did they just want the facts and statistics, all those kind of things. But it would have to go very fast. So you'd have to say to the customer, well, when would be the best time to follow up with you?
Right.
Because sometimes they're not going to buy right then. Most of the time they're not going to buy right then. So you ask them, when is the next time to follow up with you? And you're planning what your follow-up is about. But then in corporate America, just like with many things that many other entrepreneurs and salespeople might be selling, the actual follow-up could be 2 or 3 years. Now, then you have to determine with the prospect, how often do you want me to follow up with you?
Right.
Because you know it's going to take a while if there's a committee in corporate. You know there's a lot of people involved. It might take 6 months. It might take a year. It might take two. But the best way to follow up is along with the way the customer wants you to follow up with, and that means, once again, using an introvert's strengths, we ask the questions, and then we plan the follow-up.
I love that. That's such a great reminder of a really basic thing, such as just ask. What's the best way to follow up with you? When would be a good time? That we don't have to make assumptions about it.
Right, and also when you're asking, and how is the best way? There are a lot of people who are assuming today,
mm-hmm.
who are entrepreneurs, accessing the internet, using it a lot with their friends and clients, and thinking email is the best way to follow up.
Mm-hmm.
But not everyone likes email. So not only, you know, what's the best time to follow up and when would be the best time to follow up, but how do you want me to follow up with you? Because don't forget, we still have this antique way of communicating via telephone.
Right.
Use that. They might prefer it. And then we have the upgraded version of that antique called Skype, because
mm-hmm.
they might actually enjoy the conversation and hearing the conversation rather than seeing the email or seeing a fax. But a lot of times it's also in person, in your own community you're selling.
Right.
I'd love for you to stop in, like say, in six weeks. Just give me a call before you come by, but I think let's sit down and talk again. So, yeah, it's all the way your customer wants you to follow up. And I think that's, again, we get hung up with it. We think that we're supposed to control that, but what we want to do actually is guide it according to way the customer wants it.
Yes, that is that I think is probably something of a stretch. I know it's a stretch for myself, and I'm guessing for some other introverts, that we want to follow up in the way that's comfortable for us.
Yeah.
And that's often something like email. You know, picking up the phone and calling is much more, like, we think about how we would want to be followed up with.
Right.
And
right.
we let that dictate how we follow up with others, when in reality what you're saying is that we need to, it's important for us to be sensitive to and aware of the preferences of the person that we are hoping to engage.
Right.
So along those lines of following up, you know, sometimes maybe that first one is easy and you might call and leave a voicemail and you don't hear back for a little while. How do you get to that point where you don't feel like, say you've got your timing right,
mm-hmm.
you know, you know you're following up the right time, you know you're following up with the right method. Still, my mind goes to that, oh, I'm harassing them, I'm bothering them, I'm being a nuisance.
Mm-hmm.
How do you approach that particular mindset? You know, what's a reframe that we can have for that?
Probably, I guess there's several things to think about with that. I don't know where I heard this along in my sales career, probably some wise manager, could have been an extrovert, I don't really know, but I remember someone telling me that, Pat, your prospects do not wake up in the morning thinking about you.
Right. That's humbling, isn't it?
You know, you're right.
Yeah.
Because I'm not waking up in the morning thinking about, I don't know, that car salesman that I just saw with the
right.
other day. So I think the first thing to kind of begin to alleviate your own feelings that you're harassing someone or bothering them is to recognize they're not even thinking about you.
Right.
So you could hardly be harassing them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think another thing is, you know, if you have planned it with someone that there is going to be follow-up, and I guess that's really, you know, let's repeat that again, Beth.
Mm-hmm.
It really is part of your role as a salesperson to get a semblance of an idea of your client's time frame so that then you can build your follow-up in it. And then what I would say is if you've done that right, you owe it to your customer to follow up.
Exactly.
My goodness, don't come along and heat up that hot water for the tea, have a tea bag in the cup, and then just leave me sitting there by letting the water stop boiling and not even heating it up. That's what you're doing to me when you've followed up with me because I expressed interest or because someone gave you my name and said, you know, oh, you could definitely use what Beth has. And now you've called me, and now you feel like you've piqued my interest, and now you're not going to follow up. How dare you? That's ruder than you following up. Because I know, and I'm not sure that it is that I've been in sales for so long, but many times my husband and I will have a conversation for the few times now that we might go out shopping together to buy something. And when we don't hear back from that person, we have conversations here that go, can you believe that? Mm-hmm. We went out to the store. We told them what we wanted. It's a week later. They still haven't called us. What's going on here? What's wrong with this picture? Why do I have to pick up the phone?
Yeah. And you figure, you know, well, they must have enough business. They must be doing just fine without my business. So
that's
I guess I'll move on.
That's right. So you really, it's an obligation. Once you've started the process, you really have to look at that follow-up as an obligation that you have because you piqued that person's interest and they obviously had an interest because there's something they need, something that they don't have, something that they want. Somehow there's something missing because they haven't gotten what you offer yet and it's your job to do the follow-up because you don't know when. It's very interesting as human beings. You just don't know when they'll be in enough pain for what you have that they're ready to tell you they want what you have. You can't possibly know that because, again, they don't wake up thinking about you and they're not going to call you.
Right.
So,
yeah, I remember when I first started my coach training and one of the instructors, you know, pulled out her business card and said, you know, I've had instances where I've given this business card to somebody and I didn't hear from them again for 2 or 3 years because it took that long. You know, they might have, you know, stayed in touch through email or, you know, other ways, but they said it was that long before that person got back to them. And so it really is a process with which to be patient and, again, to recognize that the client or the customer is on their own timetable, not on ours.
Yeah, and I like the way you said that, Beth, because you've kind of given it a picture of structure, which, again, we know introverts prefer structure.
Yes.
So the structure, though, what we have to learn is it's not our structure. It's the structure of the prospective client, and that's where we bring in our other strengths of being willing to listen to the person enough and plan it thoroughly with them to the degree that we know that staying in touch in the way that they want us to is a good idea. And that's the thing also about the follow-up isn't to say, so are you ready now?
Right.
Okay, that's not follow-up. That is being a pest. Follow-up is to show, and this is where I really think introverts have an advantage. My goodness, why do we want to go out and get all these relationships going when really just a few of them are going to really be beneficial for us? So if we can, as we're listening not just for clues about are they a prospective client for what I have, but listening for them genuinely as a person, and we find out they have a granddaughter or a grandson. They like safaris. They've been to Africa. They'd like to go to Egypt. Then, when those things come across our radar screen and in the structure of the follow-up process, it's time for us. Then we send them an email or a postcard or pick up the phone and we say, I just heard that such and such a cruise line is having a special on an Egypt tour. I just know you said you were interested in that and I'd be happy to forward this on to you. That is follow-up.
Yes.
That is follow-up. And you might be surprised. They might say, I'm not interested in going to Egypt right now. But what about your coaching? I think I'm ready for that.
Exactly. And people always relate, I shouldn't say always, but most, you know, relate positively to the person who brought them a resource that they appreciated.
Absolutely.
So I really love that you're reminding us that follow-up is not necessarily about making or closing a sale. It's about forming a relationship.
Yes.
And really, that's, like you said, a place where the introvert curiosity can really be to our advantage.
Yes.
So, yes, I wish we had more time, but I really want to thank you for joining us. And I do have one question before we part, and that is one I ask of all my guests. If you were to take a vacation on Introvert Island for a year, what three books would you want to have with you?
I have this book I read daily about just the Bible. It's not the Bible, but it's about the Bible, and it's in a day, just encouraging words for the day of getting through that day.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I've always wanted to, I've actually thought about being on a deserted island, but having more of a person with me, and I've always wanted to be with Rod Serling, the guy with the Twilight Zone. He's just such an interesting person, and he could keep a conversation of going of depth of interest until eternity on a desert island. There would be no end to satisfying my little mind with someone like him.
So you'd need more than a year, it sounds like. Maybe a decade.
I think so.
So Pat, how can people learn more about you and your services?
Well, they can visit my blog. That is patricia-weber.com. That's Weber with one B.
Mm-hmm.
They can visit my downloadable excerpt copy, 32 pages of my ebook about how to be a happy and successful introvert, and that's at coachingforintroverts.com. And they can just email me at pweber with one B at prostrategies.com. So those are three ways. My blog, patricia-weber.com. My downloadable 32-page ebook, coachingforintroverts.com, and my email, pweber@prostrategies.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Pat. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I think you've given us all some really wonderful tips that I think people are going to be able to put these to use right away, as well as some great points for reflection on, you know, what's our own, what lens are we looking at sales through? And how is that serving us or not? And, how can we reframe that so that it becomes our own instead of what we've seen of others? So
it's
thank
been
you.
My pleasure. Yes, it's my pleasure.
Thank you, Pat.
Okay, thanks, Beth.
This is Beth Below, and you've been listening to The Introvert Entrepreneur. Special thanks to Patricia Weber for joining us today. And thank you for spending this time with me. Join me each week for insights, information, and inspiration for introverts who know that success is an inside job. If you'd like to learn more, please visit theintrovertentrepreneur.com. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/theintrovertentrepreneur. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.